Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I have Sean in studio. This is a show about what matters most in our life, our mind, our thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. In this show, I will share some insights with you regarding uncertainty, and then I'll bring you Nina Bosky. She's a producer, she's a speaker, coach, and the host of Marilyn Monroe Behind the Icon podcast. We talk about Marilyn's childhood trauma and success and what we can learn from her after all these years. It's an amazing podcast, so you got to listen to our conversation about it. Then I'll bring you Susie Moore. She's the author of Stop Checking Your Likes. We will talk about how to let go of your need to be liked and handle rejections, and no matter how you were raised, create success in your life. We'll be right back with the tip of the week.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Perfect tip for the week. This week, I've been noticing how we face uncertainty versus certainty. I noticed how in different realms and areas of our life, we're constantly facing uncertainty. I also noticed that what we call certainty in the present moment is also only temporary until the changes happen, which creates uncertainty again. We come to face the uncertainty of our health with COVID-19, and even if we don't have it today, doesn't guarantee that we won't have it tomorrow. So the certainty of today does not extend itself to the future. All we could ever say about what we have, what we think or feel is until further notice. I've been working with people who are starting their intimate relationships and are uncertain about their choices and how the future would be for them. Even with the best of the relationships, no one can guarantee that the status quo will remain no matter how amazing it is. So all we could say is until further notice. We can see this is in every area of life. Life can be great or it can suck, but until further notice. So how do we live with the anxiety that gets created for us with the uncertainty of the future? Most people hold a positive vision for the future to inspire them to move forward. However, their anxieties might take over looking at all the obstacles that show up for them not to achieve their goals. Everyone at times also experiences envisioning all possible negative outcomes, even the worst case scenarios. Human beings are future-oriented beings and have a tendency to project the past and the present results to the future to protect themselves or inspire and motivate themselves. However, we know inevitably that all we have as certain is what we have in the present moment and what we created in the past. Maybe that is why we insist on projecting the results of certain times to the uncertain times of the future in order to make an attempt of creating certainty in the future. A healthy way of dealing with uncertainty is to enjoy the certainty that is in the present moment and know that you have the skills to handle uncertainties and you have the ability to learn the skills that are needed for all that shows up for you in life. I assert this notion, certainly, with a lot of certainty. Since the reality is that since you were born, nothing was certain. And guess what? You made it so far. If you're not liking what's happening in the present moment in your life, yet it is certainly a reality that you have to deal with, then you would be doing something to change it to a desired outcome, or hoping for a change to happen, which again puts you on a path of uncertainty. How do you cope with uncertainty? Embrace it. Embrace what is certain in the present moment. If you don't like what's happening, embrace it anyway. Tolerate it, handle it, contain it. Start looking for solutions that you can go beyond it. Detach from the need to hold on to any type of certainty because it's just not real. And trust your ability to handle the uncertainty that life brings for you. I want to hear from you. So go to my website, fujian.com. Go to any of the social medias, which is Dr. Fujian Zain, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, any of them. Let me know what you think about the show. Let me know the topics that you want me to talk about. In that way that I know that I'm connected to you. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Nina Bosky and Marilyn Monroe. Are you afraid? Are you getting panic attacks? Are you getting bored and can't stand it anymore at your home? Are you finding yourself in a bind with a relationship at home? Are you wondering what all of the fuss is? And are you determined to guard yourself against all others? Or worried about how am I going to pay my rent or mortgage? In respect to the coronavirus stress, I'm offering a sliding scale online psychotherapy for anyone in California and life coaching to anyone in the world who's suffering financially. Please connect with me at fujian.com, fujian.com. Welcome back, everyone. I am with Nina Bosky, which is a producer, speaker, a coach, and the host of Marilyn Behind the Icon. Welcome to the show.
Hi, nice to be here, Fujian.
I'm excited because I listened to your the podcast. I'm really not a Marilyn Monroe fan at all. I didn't really know her, but I got to know you, and then I got interested in what you did. And then I started listening to the podcast, and I'm like, wow, like that is awesome. So I just wanted you to share who you are. And how come Marilyn?
I know that's such an interesting segue into talking about her, because I actually too was the same way. I didn't step into the world of Marilyn thinking that that's what I was going to do. People always think of me as, oh, you must be such a big fan of Marilyn. And I think that what happens, it's kind of like what happened with you when you started listening to the episodes, is that she draws you in. And once she draws you in, she was such a big presence when she was alive. So it's kind of interesting. Her legacy is probably even bigger. So the energy of her is still very much alive. So it brings that, you know, to the forefront, right?
Very much. So first, tell our audience a little bit about you and your background.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been a media girl since I was 17. I started in radio, then moved into advertising. I was one of the first people on the Movie Time channel before it was the E! Entertainment news channel when they first started creating what they call VJs, right, back in the day. And I always had a business side when I moved into sales and advertising and that whole realm, working with the movie studios, but I always kept my creative side, which was interviewing and being a part of, movies. And when I launched my company, Life Bites Global, we would take movie themes and we would talk about them as they relate to life. So they would air on, let's say, Lifetime and We and Oxygen and the Hallmark Channel, the morning show. So I'd do these little snippets of a movie theme. And then we would talk to the celebrities, personal growth experts like yourself, right? And everyday people talking about that movie theme. So in 2012, I was approached by somebody that was writing a book around Marilyn, and I was doing a live television show. It was actually one of the first YouTube digital TV shows back in 2012. And Marilyn came across my lap, and I read the book, and when I talked to the author, I said, you know, this really reads like a movie. This should be a movie. And he's like, well, we do have a script, and the script was optioned by HBO. So within a series of a few months, which is really unheard of, we were literally going to Cannes with two offers, okay? It became a film called Goodnight Marilyn. And from that place, to be honest with you, coming from the marketing side of movies and marketing on the back end of when a movie is already made and ready to go, I was actually thinking, everybody talks about how difficult funding a movie is. I'm thinking, this is really easy, until it wasn't. And we fell out of escrow. And so, to make a long story short, what happened is I said, well, I'm going to go back to my radio roots. I will start a radio show called Goodnight Marilyn Radio. And it became such a successful viral hit that we did three seasons of the investigation around Marilyn, even though the film Goodnight Marilyn is a thriller noir. And so from that, all of these other elements, including this new podcast, became a part of the mix. So I have a feature film, we have a thriller noir, we have a docuseries that's the investigation of Marilyn's death, and then we have the podcast that really sheds light to mental illness and addiction, but also a dramatic podcast like you heard that is entertaining and brings you into Marilyn's story, whether you're a Marilyn fan or not.
Very true. You know what was intriguing for me as I was hearing her story, and it was someone in usually, obviously I'm a therapist and I work a lot with trauma, and usually you look at people who've gone through trauma and they have a lot of ordeals in their life, and that you could see that also in their future. And in looking at Marilyn's life, looking at how she was born and raised and then where she got, you could see how much of the turmoil would follow her. But there was also this other part that was interesting to me, and I wanted to ask you, what do you think it also created a person who, regardless of all of that, was moving forward and then yet created, like you said, a legacy that was way beyond her life? Like, the legacy is way, way, way beyond what she's done and her life. So what do you think contributed to that kind of a legacy afterward?
You know, that's a really good question, and I don't think there's a simple answer to it. But one of the reasons why I think is that there's a vulnerability to Marilyn that even back in the day, she was willing to be truthful. And if you think about it, where she was in the 1950s was her biggest time of her career, right? And during those times, it was leave it to Beaver, father knows best. I mean, everything was sweet and wonderful. And you didn't talk about things like childhood trauma or abuse or civil rights and being vocal about certain things. She wasn't afraid to tell people how she was really feeling. And I think that vulnerability is what really, I think, attracts people to her even today. You can say it's her beauty and her glamour and it's old Hollywood, but there's a lot of old Hollywood glamorous movie stars. And yet she really stood the test of time. And I really do think, and also you have the lure of all these documentaries and books that have come out over the years. And, you know, you have a lure of a conspiracy theory, and then, you know, that all adds to that intrigue. So I think there was a building over the decades of what makes her such an iconic legacy today.
You know, when I was listening to some of the episodes, What I really experienced was also there was a purity in her. I know that people don't necessarily look at Marilyn and say pure, no, but I got a purity that I hear also you, in a sense, you're calling it a vulnerability, and I'm sensing, yes, that was I sensed the vulnerability, but behind the vulnerability, I sense like when I hear her voice or what she says, her sentences, it almost comes from really like a childlike purity. And childlike, I'm not talking like immature, I'm talking childlike, which has the essence of a purity in them. What were your experience with her?
I love this question. It's a great question. And I think you're absolutely right when you talk about that purity or that innocence, right? There's something very kind of simple and innocent, and it's like fragile and strong at the same time. So she has both. But I do think that she's a complex human being because she has that ability to be kind of pure and innocent and childlike. And then when you read some of her writing, it's so deep and some of it very dark and prolific that you go, wow, she's a really deep soul on top of kind of that purity and innocence, childlike quality that she has too. So it's this dichotomy that seems to run throughout her life. And people always want to put her in a box. So I'll get people saying to me, oh, what a tragic figure, right? Or she was so unhappy. And I'm like, well, yeah, she was, but there's also some really beautiful moments in Marilyn's life, even throughout the day, where she can be happy and sad all in a moment of an hour. And kind of like human beings, we're not so one-dimensional, right? So, and that's one of the things we want to do in this series is to humanize Marilyn, because I think people have a very not actual, unless you're a true Marilyn fan, you might really get her. But a lot of people don't, they see her like I did as this fictional character, kind of cutesy and ditzy, and that blonde that kind of walks across the stage, and she's that coy little sex symbol. I didn't dislike her. I just didn't, I was like, oh, it's Marilyn Monroe. But when you get to know her more, you start to see, just like when I would talk about movie themes, celebrities have themes about their life that all of us also can learn by. And we're hoping to really shed light around mental illness and addiction because, as you know, right now, particularly the state of where we're at, a lot of things are on the rise, including depression, including suicide. And I think it's really important for us to really bring, not just shed light on it, but find some resources and support for people really getting help in healing.
Yeah, especially opiate use and abuse and death are the highest in the United States. And it's always been the highest also among entertainers.
Yeah, and Fusion, the thing that is really interesting about Marilyn's story, and it gets overshadowed because of the conspiracy theories, people just want to, believe that she was murdered. But regardless of what you think happened to her, today, if her doctors were alive and were treating Marilyn, they would actually be brought up on charges just like Michael Jackson's doctor. 900 pills 3 months before she passed, 700 of them were sleeping pills. And two of the drugs, actually, which one of them is one of the drugs that Michael Jackson died of, was chlorhydrate. So Nebutal and chlorhydrate were being prescribed together at the same time. And they didn't watch her closely enough to be able to monitor her ability or not to be able to utilize those drugs.
Yes. I've also worked, obviously, one of my specialties is addiction, and I work with a lot of opiate addicts or, let's say, poly substance user. And I do think that there's also a manipulation that they do with their doctors. So, yes, there needs to be doctors and systems. I think the systems of all the information going to one place so that the doctors actually have the ability to check if they've and other their other prescriptions around too. It's very new. It wasn't then when Marilyn was there.
Not at all. And her doctor actually went on television not knowing at all that the internet was 20 years down the road. Oh, no, I didn't prescribe chloral hydrate. Well, you know, now you got the prescription, you got his handwriting, and it's there. And I think that's it's a really important aspect. And I don't know what you feel about this, but I think we have to have some more conversations and shakeups and shifts in terms of our rehab community, especially for people that don't have the resources to go. And you go to a, let's say, a government or a, you know, a subsidized rehab facility. So many of them keep their patients addicted. So you have it rampant, actually having, you know, people that maybe have been in the jail system that are court ordered to go to rehab, but some of those rehab facilities are just perpetuating the issue. It's not actually helping. It's just feeding the system.
I agree that there are a lot of rehabs that are doing that. There's also a different dynamic that an addict has. And I think that when you're an addict, there's a part of you that is consistently manipulating and lying to yourself and everyone around you. So you have a system that is based on even the person not necessarily attempting to take care of themselves. Like Nina, when somebody unfortunately is diagnosed by cancer or diabetes or you know, any of the illnesses, their brain and their survival concept pushes them in order to get help, to do anything that their doctors are telling them, to
have
their
point.
Family support them and move forward. Unfortunately, with addiction, because the organ that is being illed or diseased is the brain itself, which is the part that does the decision making, does not make the right decisions for the patients themselves. And then they're the one who are consistently lying and manipulating, abusing, misabusing, you know, everything that's around them. And then, you know, we also put it, and I do agree that the physicians and the, you know, rehab and all of that are responsible for creating a treatment that is appropriate. But I'm also sensing that one of the difficulties about this disease or illness in comparison to the others is that although it appears that the patient really, really wants help, a part of them, the addicted part of them, manipulates and lies to themselves and constantly takes them back into decisions that are disruptive and destructive. And you can see it consistently in relapses and the different types of relapses that are happening. So then,
that's such a really good point, because even if the system were not broken in some areas, you still have the addict who for the most part is set up to be manipulative and to lie to themselves because their brain is in that, you know, addictive state, or if you will, to kind of push them to keep having that drug or that substance to be able to fulfill that fix. So I think that's a really great point, really wonderful point.
So there's a, but I think that more and more when these type of stories and are put out and they're shed light into, I think it takes away a little bit of the stigma, the concept of, oh, they must be bad that they're using, and brings in more into a conversation of, let's look at what happens. This happens to people who are successful. This happens to people who are going through traumas, or no, they had a beautiful life at the beginning and they just started using as a teen. And this is what, you know, their brain chemistry changed. And now they're completely at the mercy of their addiction. We need to really look at this disease in a whole different new light. And I know that I think that when there's more and more information about it and people really understand it, they get to see that in their own family systems and how to get support and how to get help. So
I also just to add on to what you're saying, because I think what you're saying is so, so powerful, is that level of getting help and stigma. You know, if you have diabetes, if you have cancer, it's very, you may or may not want to tell people, but if you do, there's not a stigma around it, right? That kind of stigma of, oh, I want to stay away from you. But with borderline personality or a bipolar disorder, when somebody hears that potentially, if they are not made aware of what that means, there is a stigma. And what happens is that a lot of times, including Marilyn, she wanted to get help, but the reality was is that one, she wasn't getting the right help, but two, you know, a lot of creative people, their brains move very fast. So then they get into that addiction state. And the challenge with it is that if I'm going to go and let's say I'm going to apply for a job, and then this is there anything you should know? Do you have a disability? Let's say I do have diabetes. Diabetes is something that I can say I have, and not anybody's going to go, oh my gosh, they might feel for me, but it's not going to be that stigma. But if I said I'm a borderline personality and somebody has misinformation about what that looks like, somebody might go like this to me. And it might feel that sense of, you know, like that feeling like I'm not okay. And the one thing I want to do, and we're doing with Marilyn's story, is at 36 years old, she had done 30 plus films. Okay. Look at the childhood that she came from. No mom, no father. I mean, her mother and grandmother were institutionalized. She was moved around almost every year, either in a foster home or some type of kind of orphan care. And by 16, she was getting married. And that's a lot of trauma and sexually abused on top of that. So if she can survive and look at everything that she's achieved, our message is like, wow, you don't have to let your mental issue, whatever it is, whether it's depression, anxiety, borderline personality, bipolar, it's about getting the right treatment. And I know you're so for that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's how it's so intriguing that with all that she had to go through, not only she built her life, but she also created a legacy for herself. Where can anybody find you?
Okay, so all you have to do is go to behindtheicon.com, behindtheicon.com, or it's on any major podcast platform, but it's the title of it is actually called Marilyn Behind the Icon.
It was a joy to have you on the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much. It's so fun to talk to you.
Same here. And everyone, please go and listen to these podcasts. They're awesome. I love them. They're so entertaining. And yet you learn so much about so much more. Marilyn Monroe and so much more. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zane. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Check us out online at KMET1490AM.com.
Hello and welcome back again. Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zane, and I have Susie Moore with me. She is the author of Stop Checking Your Likes and What If It Does Work Out, which was named by The Entrepreneur as one of the 8 business books entrepreneurs must read to dominate their industry. A former Silicon Valley sales director turned life coach, she has been featured on The Today Show, as well as in O Magazine, Business Insider, Forbes, Times, and Marie Claire. So welcome to the show, Susie.
Oh, thank you. I'm so delighted to be here with you today.
Same here. I loved your book. It's fun reading. Mm-hmm. It's simple reading. And then what it does, it's personal. You talk about you, and then you talk about everything you've learned, and then you give
great examples and, you know, step by step and direct messages and what people need to look at and great exercises. You did a great job. Thank you.
Well, thank you. One thing that I really believe that in order to do some deep work, it doesn't have to be heavy. It doesn't have to be so serious, you know, really reliving past experiences that don't feel great. I believe that we can do this in a lighter way. And also that we're more receptive when we don't feel stressed, when we feel calm, when we feel good. And that's one of the ways that I like to work. I think that we don't have to be so heavy in order to heal.
Exactly. What made you decide to write this book? You talk a lot about your personal experiences right up front. So yes. What got you to do this?
Well, what I've learned is that we all have almost like something to hide or something that we wish people didn't know about us, or a feeling of shame, or maybe a belief that we're flawed somehow. And so I wanted to put out some pretty bizarre, honest stories, because I think that when you hear the truth from other people, you then start to go, oh, well, you know, maybe it's not so unusual if my family is quite strange, or maybe it's not that unusual if I'm divorced when I'm young, or if there's addiction in my family or mental illness in my family. And I just wanted to, like, frankly, tell the truth and put out stories that are just human. And even though other people might not have the exact same stories, what I've been hearing is that people feel more confident to share their struggles and share what it is that they've overcome, because even though the experiences aren't the same, the emotions are universal. And I think it's a very generous, cool, fun thing to share your stories and to do it in a way that can be kind of entertaining whilst also just really informative.
Absolutely. One of the things that I saw in your book, you said that if you want a different result, you have to do things differently. And part of that came also from the conversation of looking at, okay, we inherit a lot of beliefs and we inherit a lot of experiences as we're living with our family. And sometimes we get caught into those belief systems and the way that they affect, you know, I'm a psychotherapist. I work every day with people's belief systems. We go back and look at what happened to them and how it actually manifests itself in life. And you have allocated chapters about how you can recognize that and shift from that. Can you share about that a bit?
Oh, yes. My favorite thing is to question beliefs. And what is so interesting is, I would say, in my experience, in my research, probably only 10% of us actually question our beliefs, right? It's quite a rare thing to do. We often just think this is how life is, right? Whatever the beliefs are, rich people are crooks, people can't be trusted, that this is safe, that isn't safe, this is good, this is bad. Just the perception that we have, how everything is kind of labeled in our minds, that it's, you know, surely exists, but is it helpful? And in a lot of cases, it is helpful and it keeps us safe. It keeps us on the right track. But in a lot of cases, I think we're just really holding back and we're living kind of smaller lives, quite contained lives, because we never actually pause and think, is this true for me? Is this like, is this accurate for my life? Is this serving me? And it's a wonderful, like, delicious realization when you realize that a thought can be changed, like a thought which just is, you know, on repeat, as you know, becomes a belief. And that can be changed if it's not healthy for you. I find it completely uplifting and wonderful. And this is really where the personal freedom kicks in, because you no longer blame anybody else. You no longer see the world as, you know, this is a fact, that's a fact. You question it all and then you can choose the beliefs that are right for you.
I love it when people are doing something completely destructive and they keep telling me, well, that's who I am. And I'm like, that's not who you are. That's how... You know, maybe you chose to be, or based on what was happening, you picked out all of this, but that's not who you are. And that's part of the distinction you're making in the book also, is look at the belief system that you have, look at who you are and how different that those two can be. There's also that you said word no is no. It's no thing. It's not, when you look at it that way, that you could the hard things when the word no doesn't mean nothing or you know, rejection. And as I love the rejections that come up because you learn from them and have a different relationship with no. So talk a bit about that.
Oh, yes, I love speaking about rejection. I love speaking about getting shut down. I mean, the way that I define confidence is I think it's simpler than more people than most people would understand. Often we think, a confident person is really charismatic, right? Or they're maybe always winning at work, or they know how to be a great dinner party guest because they're so witty and funny, whatever it may be, our vision of a confident person. But confidence is simply, the way that I define it, your willingness to be uncomfortable. That's it, right? And if you're willing to be uncomfortable, like what would you go for? If you're willing for someone to say no, right? If you're willing for it to be shut down, unliked, not invited to something, whatever it may be, then what doesn't become available for you in terms of your life and your future and possibilities? And it's so interesting because success is volume, right? I think successful people know this because they just go for a lot of things and some things work out and some things don't. And that's great, right? But a lot of people too will just be like, well, I tried a couple of things that didn't work. And so there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with my approach. I'm a failure. Whereas if you're just like, okay, well, that didn't work out. What's the next thing? What's the next thing? What's the next thing? And not letting our ego always be in the driving seat of, oh my gosh, there's something wrong with me. I'm being rejected. I mean, frankly, no one's really rejecting you. They're just so busy managing themselves, managing their own life, managing their own career. You're either a really good fit for something that you're going for right now or not. That's cool. Nothing personal there. You're either in the right place for an opportunity, or you're not. Also, that's okay. But simply, the more you go for it, the more you're going to win. And I've seen this as a business coach too, in so many cases where it's not the most talented, qualified, brilliant people who succeed. It's those who are just willing to be uncomfortable and to keep going and to keep taking more and more steps.
Yes, I think there's a persistency in and I a little bit of curiosity and just wanting
Yes.
to enjoy your life and move forward and get into places that you've never known before, because that's where the excitement is, and that's where the growth is, in a sense. So
Yes. And don't you also think that sometimes we take it all a bit too seriously?
I know you said relax. I love that sentence. Relax. No one else knows what they're doing either.
Yes. When you think about it, like truly, no one can predict even the next 24 hours of the future. We don't know anything, right? There are just some of us who are going for it and some of us who really aren't. And when we see someone who just seems reasonable what they're doing, they're just taking action, taking action, taking action. And in coaching, we speak a lot about the confidence competence loop, meaning the more you take action, the more competent you become in anything. And then the more competent you become, the more confident you naturally feel in going for more. So action is its own reward, whatever the result is, like good or bad or wanted or unwanted. So it's such a great thing to just kind of be less serious, be easier about it. Like, well, really, whatever it is, because very few things are life and death. Very few things are so serious that requires the stress that we just so easily allow in.
I think we really get to that right before our in our deathbed, which we come back. And what was it that I was taking so seriously every
I
day?
know I was losing sleep over this thing that I spent too much money on, or this comment that somebody made to me, or this belief about my body that isn't even true. It's so fascinating, the things that we worry about, because yes, like you said, on the deathbed, will it matter then? Like really, and it's really important to practice that now.
And you have a chapter about it's okay if people don't like you. And that's exactly what you also get in your deathbed. Like, I have to worry about all these people. Who cares if they like you or not?
Precisely. And when you think about it, people aren't obsessed with us the way that we think they are, right? We're in the center of our universe. It's our movie that we're living all the time. So naturally, we think that people are watching us. People are always criticizing us. People are observing us, thinking that we're saying something silly, thinking that we're doing it wrong. Everyone else is just worried about themselves all the time, thinking the same things. We're all just trying to make it through the week right now, right? Trying to like stay married in quarantine, right? Trying to like not burn the chicken, trying to make sure we're on top of all the credit card bills, whatever it is. We're not so obsessed with you, right? Whoever you are. We're just like trying to make it through the week, live our lo or like live our own lives the best way that we can. And I think that can really take the pressure off too.
Yeah, because things aren't going to go perfect every time. Just so we started, for everyone who's watching us and listening to us, this is how the two of us, Susie and I, started our show, right?
We started, and then my dog started chewing on everything. So then I had to take him out, and then we need to stop. And then we had to, my phone started ringing. So we had to stop. Everything that could have just kind of interrupted us did. And, you know, it was more like I could be worried about what Susie thinks of me or what all of you think of me, or it happens. Let's have fun together and move on. And that's part of what I think we see every single probably day and sometimes every hour, that things just don't go the way we want it to go. And it's okay.
Yeah, and I really think too that we're missing the point of our life a lot of the time. So yeah, we had so much fun right when things go wrong. I love it. But I remember one time my husband and I were going to go to the beach when we lived in New York, and it's like a bit of a journey, get the train to Long Beach. And I remember I wanted us to be up at a specific time to catch a specific train and pack this specific bag so we'd have this ideal day. And he wanted to catch the later train. He wanted to sleep. And my whole goal for the day was to have a fun, enjoyable day, right? But he threw me off track in the morning, and I was so angry with him all day. By the time we got to I ruined the day with my expectation of it has to be this way. Yeah. And so my point of the day was to have fun, and the fun was gone because my expectation wasn't met. And I was like, I've completely missed the point. Like, I've missed the point. If we can't just, like, be easy, have fun. Like, yeah, things change. Be flexible. Just being easier on ourselves and being easier on each other, I swear, is the way to no suffering or a lot less suffering.
Oh, absolutely. You talk about, in one of your chapters, valuing yourself, even kind of like the small things that you take for granted. And it was beautiful because I saw this, and I actually do give this to my clients also. And it's hard for them to do, which is write a list about everything you do and give it power and give it value and even give it dollar value. I'm sure you remember
yes.
Business world that this okay. the research that came in that people who chose the mystic life, women who chose to be homemakers. And if they, when they actually went in and put a price on everything that they did all day, if they were going to, in the corporate world, they were going to get paid, it would be minimum 140 grand per year, right?
Yes. Research. Yes.
It's like everything that we do, which we take ourselves for granted, mm-hmm. and we don't value ourselves. And it's such a great chapter to really tune in. Things that we do that it appears effortless, but having it be effortless, it doesn't mean that it doesn't have value.
Oh my gosh, it's absolutely true. In fact, one of my best friends, whenever we meet new people or go new places, which is tricky, of course, at the moment, but if a woman ever says to me, you know, I'm just a stay-home mom, she's like, oh, don't say that around Susie. Like, I will lose my mind. Because I come from a single mom of five girls, and you don't even need to have five girls or be a single mom, right? But what a parent does, like the amount of work involved, the amount that you give, that you do, that you love, that you care, that you provide, it is massive. But no one will appreciate that unless you can appreciate that. This goes for everything. And what I've realized too is anytime we think someone's not appreciating something that we do, we're not appreciating it. And that's always the truth. And everything else is just a reflection of how we're feeling. So if we think, you know, my husband doesn't appreciate me, my boss doesn't appreciate me, my friends, it's like, are you appreciating yourself? Because if that appreciation is there and it's being generated by you, you kind of don't need it from anybody else. But the world will always match how you're feeling. And I think that's a really important thing to know, because that way you can take responsibility, accountability, and then start actively appreciating yourself and doing it with intention, because it doesn't just happen. Yeah. We don't just wake up thinking, oh gosh, you know, I'm doing a good job. Like, and there's yes.
And you say, when you want to feel really good, start wearing a blazer.
You know what? The blazer is magic.
Actually, this morning I'm like, I'm gonna wear a blazer, and I'm like, it was too hot in here and I couldn't, but I like
the blazer is magic. In fact, I just did a couple of videos yesterday for a TV network, and I put on a blazer for one, and I'm like, I already feel different in this.
That's true.
It makes a difference.
Yeah, that is true. I never thought about it. I mean, I was just figuring, okay, you know, I get more into the mode of businesswoman, but it has more to that, because it does give you suddenly like this confidence that you have. I don't know what the magic of it is, just confidence. Suddenly you're like, you're it. Like, I got it.
Yeah, in my corporate career, I'd wear a blazer every day, blazer and high heels, blazer and high heels. And now, of course, I work for myself. It's different. I'm more casual. But why not? Like, why not make the effort? In fact, I had lunch with a friend recently, and she said, oh, my gosh, everyone's joking that they're not showering during COVID, sweats, everything. She's like, I've only done that a couple of days because I start to not feel good. Right. Yeah, she's like, I just feel older. I don't feel like I can, like I'm showing up as myself. And look, everyone, do what pleases you, right? There's no right or wrong. But sometimes I think that if we even just make a bit of effort here and there, just see how it feels, because it might be worth doing, even just to inject a bit more fun or variety into how you feel.
Susie, you also talk about, and I love this part where you said, we all at times look at another person and may envy them or say, oh, what do they have that I don't? Mm-hmm. And especially in social media right now, like nobody puts in their miserable time there or when they don't look good. Every picture and everything is all hyped up and how great I am and, you know, everything that is about me that is successful. So many people start looking at another person's social media and they still think, my God, the whole world's got it. And I'm the only one who just doesn't have it yet. And I work with, you know, anxiety and depression. So you see this a lot and it's gotten worse with the social media. Mm-hmm. And you say, what is it that you would be fixating on another person and consider how much do you really know about the person? And then take you also suggest for them to write a list about what do I got?
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's so interesting. Like there's this old expression that if you're so quick to envy someone else, like how about you envy yourself for a minute? And there's this other old expression that I love, which is, you know, if everyone threw their problems into a pile, we'd take ours back. Right? If you saw everybody else's problems, but we don't, right? Social media isn't the enemy. I mean, I love it. I think it's a great place to be, but we see like a 5% of somebody's life, right? It's like a window and it's most often the best part. And so there's nothing wrong with that. So long as you give it that real dose of perspective, anytime you're looking at any feed or even, you know, a story, like whatever it may be, just to give it a good dose of perspective. This is the best that they're looking today, right? This is the best snapshot they've got with their partner from their vacation. This is like the one time with the baby that isn't screaming in this photo. And we know it's true because we see our own lives.
Yeah, very much.
And I tell ya, it's when we're just like not questioning anything, just accepting everything as it comes to us. And again, questioning everything, there is just so much power in it. And it's not to criticize others, but it's just to remember that we simply don't see the whole picture.
We don't. We also, you talked about, and I love this part too, you said, if somebody gives you a criticism, you don't need to defend yourself. Now, that is so hard and I read your examples on how hard it is, and it's so true, but it's especially like, you know, I do a lot of television shows and radio and podcasts, and there's definitely a lot of on Instagram and everywhere else where people give their wonderful comment. Some of them are beautiful, where obviously they say good stuff about us. It's always wonderful to hear that. Some of it is criticism that it's constructive criticism, like they give you an idea and I really appreciate it, and some of it is almost like
you know, oh yes,
you in the way they do, and all on those, you know, you have this thing of I'm gonna answer, and it's like, wait, Pujan, you don't need to answer, you just I'm gonna have to answer. It's like, no you don't. And you say, you know, can you just take it so what approach to it, and even at times agree with it, like, yeah, I agree with you, or something to the fact of like dismantling this whole, you know, piece that is showing up in front of you. I love that. Can you say more about that?
Oh, yes. I mean, when you think about being defensive, it's when we become our most irrational selves, right? It's like we're in danger. Someone is coming for us. When it's just a comment from a stranger on the internet. From who knows where, who knows what, like, we don't know anything. And what I understand, and I mean, this I know just to be the truth. Whenever someone has something, okay, it's one thing, like you said, constructive, right? If you share an opinion piece and someone says, yes, and I think, that can be great. You can have a great engagement dialogue. You can learn. But if someone's just like, you're ugly, you're stupid, you're whatever it may be, something unkind, then I know that that person's suffering, right? Because, you know, as within, so without. Right, whatever someone's giving me is simply a reflection of how they're feeling, because everything's a reflection. So it can actually be an invitation for compassion, even though that's the last thing you want to give somebody who's attacking you. It's almost like I want to give them like a hug. Like, okay, so someone's in pain. They want to comment on my body, or they want to comment on my intelligence, or they want to comment on my qualifications, like whatever it may be. Okay, and by the way, frankly, you're allowed to do that. And, you know, I'm allowed to have my opinion. Everyone else is allowed to kind of meet my opinion with their own. And that's okay. And frankly, I just don't really consider it my business, right? I mean, we only have a certain amount of energy per day.
Right.
And with a busy life, like, I know where I want to allocate mine, and it's not to strangers on the internet.
Exactly. And you also say, understand that true freedom and power begin when we become 100% accountable for our lives. And that's very, very true. What is it that we haven't said and you really want everybody to know?
I mean, gosh, I love your questions. I could talk to you forever. I'd like to reiterate the thing that you said, which is about relaxing. Because I feel like our culture teaches everything else, right? Work till your eyes bleed. Make sure you're always like progress, progress, progress. And look, yes, there is a place for that. I know that happiness is progress largely, but I think that we can also relax into our joy. Appreciate what we have and allow a lot of good things to flow to us too.
Susie, if there was something you wanted to share with people right now we have the COVID, we have elections, yes. We have a lot of ideologies that are out there. There's a lot of rage and anger. There's a lot of fear. You drive on the street and, you know, just where the way people are reacting to each other, you get how tense people are, and can you offer something to them? Oh.
Yes. My contribution to this would be to just remember that the most important thing is just finding your own steadiness with all the chaos, with all the, with everything, the hate, like the, this is 2020 is a very, very interesting year. So much is happening. But the steadiness that's within us is always going to be our peace. It'll always be our salvation. And it's always there. Even if you think it isn't and everything is unsafe and unsteady, your inner steadiness is always available to you when you tune in. And that is where you'll find peace.
So relax.
Relax. Yes.
Oh, thank you so much for being on my show, and thank you. It was a beautiful book, and I think that everyone who reads it, they're going to enjoy it as much as I did, and go through the exercises and implement them in their life.
Thank you so much. This was so much fun. Mwah.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. Everyone, Susie Moore, stop checking your likes and go to susiemoore.com to get to know her better and get the book. For all of you who are out there, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. And I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.